John Cena and Rennie Harlan? All hail the bad movie gods. We watched 12 rounds.
That was great.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flop House.
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing?
It's a podcast where we watch some bad movies and then chat. Yeah, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin, don't you know?
Elliot.
What kind of an accent's that?
That was my normal accent.
Oh no.
I just put don't you know at the end of it.
You weren't here for the last episode.
No, he was.
No, yeah, I was. I wasn't here for the one before.
Oh yeah.
There's a little bit of a break in between.
It all runs together.
Yeah,
I've stopped caring.
You've been drinking, I think.
I've stopped caring long ago.
You've been drinking and eating too much corned
beef.
What
did we watch last time?
Friday the 13th.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, that was great.
We've only been doing movies with numbers in it, and we're counting down backwards. It's 13 last week and 12 this week.
Yeah, and before that, Bride.
We watched a movie with...
Yeah, you know, 12, 13, Bride.
It's That's counting.
What did we watch this week?
A movie called 12 Rounds.
Okay, well... I imagine the listeners.
7 pounds?
No, 12 rounds.
Sorry, never mind then. It's 7 pounds, the Batman villain who commits 7 pound themed crimes.
Yeah, this is a joke that has occurred entirely off mic for the Flop House.
It's an inside joke.
So now they feel like the people listening feel like they're inside on it, right?
Yeah. They think we're pals off camera instead of enemies, which
enemies.
We are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or frenemies, maybe.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people, when I say, you know, I have to watch this fucking movie for this stupid podcast tonight, and they're like, oh, what are you watching? Like, all excited. I'm like, I don't know, something called 12 Rounds. And they're like, what the fuck's that? So, I then have to explain it. So, I don't think, I mean, it wasn't like a really well-known movie.
No,
right?
it was written up on the Onion's website, and that's the only other place I saw it, really.
Yeah, that's the most notoriety it's gotten. I remember seeing... ads for it when it was out, and basically I was like, is that villain Eric Bogosian? Oh no, wait, it's Carcetti from The Wire. And that was basically my entire, you know, knowing about 12
rounds. I've
had that
with so many movies now.
Yeah, you think Eric Bogosian's in so many movies?
Yeah, and then it turns out to be somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me it was Kane. in the trailer, you know, they revealed that the hero's WWE star John Cena, who was the star of one of my favorite movies of all time. Of course, I'm talking about The Marine. And then I found out that this movie is directed by Rennie Harlan.
Director of the least profitable film in film history, right?
Which one's that?
Cutthroat Island, I think it was.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know that.
At one point it was. It might not be anymore, but it cost them, at the time, you know, like $180 million, and it made nothing.
Elliot, if you want to get a Matthew Modine... You're going to be paying top dollar for the Modine touch.
Yeah.
You know that when Pirates of the Caribbean came out, Rennie Harlan was like, ah, now they understand. Mm-hmm. Now they get pirates.
Yeah, he was too ahead of his time.
Yeah.
Similar when he came out with Mindhunters, the movie about the FBI students who are being trained to hunt down serial killers, but one of them happens to be
to
a
hunt
serial
mines.
Killer. Yeah.
Oh, Mindhunter.
Mindhunter.
Oh, it was Mime Hunter.
No.
Or like a mine hunter, like they hunt down rogue mines.
Well, it wasn't an adaptation of the popular Microsoft game Mindhunter. They didn't adapt that into a movie.
Yeah.
So
the movie Free Cell.
I thought it was Mindhunter, the German film. It means my hunter.
Oh, wow. That's a direct translation.
Yes.
Thanks for the help.
The character's name was Hunter.
Okay. So... 12 rounds. What's the fucking deal there, Dan?
Well,
WTFTD. WTFTDTD.
I'll sum it up quick style, and then you guys can fill in the gaps.
Okay. You probably missed stuff.
Yeah. Basically.
He kept getting up to serve corned beef to us, so.
Yeah.
And cake.
And cake at one point.
I'm a hell of a host.
And you were scrapbooking most of the time. If
I recall. I was doing some decoupage.
You had a lot of pulling out your rare stamps and 1943 Madagascar butterfly.
Look,
misprint if you notice. We're like, Dad, we're trying to watch 12 rounds.
Philately doesn't take care of itself. That's something you got to keep up with.
The plane is upside down. Dan, Tom Cena is stopping a trolley car with another car. Come on.
Nope, Tom Cena.
Yeah, that's, I figure after watching 12 rounds, I deserve to call him that.
So basically, John Cena plays.
Oh, that's right, John. I thought his name was Thomas for some reason.
Whatever. It can be Tom Cena. No. So Tom Cena,
famous weatherman, Tom Cena
is the most muscular detective in the universe.
in this movie. He starts out as just a regular cop,
like a beat cop
in New Orleans or Nollins,
the Big Easy.
Yeah, where everything is easy.
And big, if you're John Cena.
So, you know, Irish, I guess...
international arms dealer.
Oh, was he? I thought...
Yeah, he's an international arms dealer.
Okay. Tommy Carcetti from The Wire.
Here his name is...
Miles Jackson.
Miles Jackson. The classically Irish name, Miles Jackson.
You know, he's doing his normal super criminal stuff.
Yep.
When he is thwarted by regular cop John Cena,
who chases his car down on foot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're in like these like Warrens, this very low
the rabbit house. Den.
Yeah, it was like Watership Down,
and somehow for some reason they keep turning down side streets, and he keeps chasing them like he's jumping
through alleyways.
Buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't expect a guy on foot to be able to sneak around and get ahead of them. But he does.
Well as Elliot, then you don't know Tom Cena.
As Elliot pointed out, it was like a serious version of that scene from Raising Arizona where Nicolas Cage is running through the house and almost get bit by the dog.
And at one point, it's like the scene in Evil Dead where he's running through a deserted house.
Mm-hmm.
Or Evil Dead 2, I guess.
But anyway, John Cena thwarts Carcetti's evil plan.
But in the process...
Miles Jackson's.
In the process, Miles Jackson's beloved girlfriend is... hit by a truck and killed instantly.
And so flash forward 1 year.
This information is written on a billiard ball, which is then knocked out of frame because Santa and his partner are playing billiards.
Oh, I missed that. That's it's like Rennie Harlan style.
It's like superimposed on the ball. It's not really written on it. Wow. But then it's superimposed.
No, that would be great if just Rennie Harlan wrote it on a ball with a Sharpie. 1 year later.
Yeah, 1 year later, what's going on? Is he a millionaire? is he some kind of a superhero?
Running
what's the deal?
President.
Well, close.
He's half man, half tiger.
He's been promoted.
Cursed from a gypsy.
He's been promoted along with his partner,
his
to
Lothario
full detective.
Partner, who's always looking for ladies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can tell that Rennie Harlan wanted to get his favorite actor, LL Cool J, to play that part, but LL. Mm-hmm. Was too busy being loved by the ladies, so they got someone
being
who
cool.
Was vaguely resembled him a little bit.
Just because he was black? Yeah. Is that it?
No,
only in being black
I
and having a mustache.
I said vaguely a little bit. Jesus Christ.
Vaguely a little bit.
What?
In that if you were
thanks
a racist.
For qualifying this
quit trying to paint me as a racist through the medium of podcasts. So they his John Cena's girlfriend gets kidnapped by Miles Jackson.
Who's just broken out of prison, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently in retribution for John Cena killing his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So
inadvertently.
John Cena's character's name, by the way, is Danny Fisher. They don't call him John Cena. It's well, not like they don't call him by his real name.
They might as well call him John
That'd
Cena.
That'd be pretty awesome, though.
You would get that in old movies. You'd have like Gene Autry or Roy Rogers be playing. We like there's a Gene Autry movie where he finds robots living underground, but he's called. I think his name is Gene Autry in the movie, so you have to assume like I guess this is what his life is like when he's not making movies. He's fighting robots.
But Miles Jackson keeps calling up John Cena, you know,
Danny Fisher,
88 minute style, to badger him.
Except he doesn't have a catchphrase. The 88 minutes killer at least had tick tock duck.
Well, but his catchphrase is sort of the whole boxing metaphor that he sets up.
Oh, that's right.
There's 12 rounds. The first round apparently is him blowing up John Cena's house. The second round is him kidnapping his girlfriend, and then the rest of the rounds are him manipulating John Santa's character into going around doing a bunch of stuff. Also, sort of like Die Hard 3, basically.
Doesn't he also blow up a plumber in the first round?
Yes, the plumber has come by to fix the sink.
Collateral damage.
John Santa could
Plumbers aren't real.
We're told in exposition that John Santa could have fixed the sink himself by replacing some part that was broken.
Yeah, flange sprocket.
This flange sprocket was broken. He didn't get a diddle wad to fix it. Mm-hmm. And the plumber had to come and fix it. John Santa goes outside of his house because his car blows up, and then the house blows up. And it's briefly noted that the plumber was in there, and then they kind of forget about it.
Yeah, I'm not going to go into all of the 12 rounds now because we can go into more detail later. We'll just skip to the end where inevitably it is discovered that the 12 rounds are, again, Die Hard 3 style, a distraction from the real plot,
mm-hmm.
which involves, I don't know, like diamonds or
something. Stealing $100 million in currency that was pulled from circulation
mm-hmm.
that is being held at the Bureau of Engraving in New Orleans.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
this twisted path leads us to an all-out, no-holds-barred grudge match in a helicopter
because the piloted girlfriend is a medevac helicopter res. I don't know.
Helicopterix.
Yeah. And so
it's a transformer, right?
I hope so. It better be. It turns from a helicopter into a sexy lady.
Into a dinosaur.
Into an Archaeopteryx, yeah.
Yeah. So who will triumph in this helicopter battle? Will it be the villain or the hero?
Will it be, as Stuart pointed out, I think, will it be the tiny villain with very thin arms, or will it be John Santa, who, as you pointed out, Dan, is a golem?
Yeah.
He's a fucking monster.
He the only thing he...
Combine Heath Ledger with a mountain, and that's John Santa.
The only thing that compares to him are the scenes in John Rambo when Sylvester Stallone is just kind of like running through swamps and looks more animal than man.
Like some kind of a mud man. Like yes. some kind of Neanderthal has escaped into our time.
you have to assume that at some point a gorilla was shaved, somehow taught to speak English, and is now roaming the earth as a cop in New Orleans.
Yeah.
So which was your favorite of the 12 rounds?
way to turn it on us, Dan.
Yeah.
Man, that's going to be tough. I liked all of them.
It's a cop-out answer. Wow.
Hey, guys. I liked when they were on the bus and the snipers were just going to indiscriminately shoot into the bus and kill
everybody.
Well,
what happened on the bus? Why were they on a bus?
They were on a bus because the bad guy wanted to talk to the good guy,
But he strapped a bomb to Molly's chest, and if his thumb is off of a trigger for more than 10 seconds, the bomb goes off in two ways. First, it drives a nail into her heart, and then second, it sets off a bomb that blows up the whole bus. So John Santa will die with innocence, but he'll live to see Molly die first, right before his eyes.
Yeah, okay. Well, you've just explained what my question was going to be. Why it couldn't just be a one-stage bomb?
I assume it's so that he could see his girlfriend die the same way that Mick Johnson did.
Yeah.
Dan Jackson. Mark Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
Bro Bissoff.
So they're on this bus and they're talking about some Tom bullshit Bombadil. That I wasn't really paying attention to.
They're asking whether they saw last night's house.
Yep. And
there's a lot I know he never said, but I assumed he would. We're not so different, you and I. Two sides of the same coin. But
7 pounds.
And so there wasn't a moment like, okay, so they, you know, they're having their chat, you know, they're talking about similarities, differences.
Poetry.
Maybe, mm-hmm. I think they talk about his girlfriend a little bit, I don't remember. And but the
it's
FBI,
probably a Yates fan, you know, coming from Ireland.
I have to assume so, yeah.
The FBI has a shitload of snipers positioned on an overpass, and they're like, yeah, we don't have a clear shot, and, you know, the good FBI agents are like, oh, no, you can't do that. You're going to need one shot to take out the glass, and then the other one is going to take out the killer or whatever.
Yeah, because they've got that reinforced bus glass.
Yeah, and they're firing BBs.
They're using Play-Doh bullets.
So, for a clean takedown, dude. So they they're like, clearly we don't have a shot, but then, of course, the
evil, asshole FBI one.
He's like, take the shot, and then, of course, John Santa is forced to save the bad guy by being shot by a sniper rifle bullet, which slows him down for a couple minutes.
For about a second, and then it's business as usual.
I believe he, even with a bullet wound in his right shoulder, manages to land a pretty devastating right hook on the
cranky FBI agent. Yeah, what was the deal with, like, okay, There's a couple problems with plausibility in 12 rounds.
I would say it starts with moment one.
but one of the problems is the FBI, instead of being like, all right, we're not going to play this this evil genius's game, is like, oh, okay, this cop has been drawn into this deadly game of cat and mouse. We should offer him all the support we can.
Yeah, he operates with unlimited authority in the city of New Orleans.
The movie almost would have been better if he wasn't, instead of a cop, was like the crooked political boss of New Orleans and had to prove himself. So when he like commandeers a fire truck or does whatever the hell he wants, it'd be like, oh, that's boss, you know, that's boss Cena. He can do whatever he wants in this thing.
What period is this movie set in your mind? I was going to give him a
crazy New Orleans name, but I couldn't think of one. What?
In your mind, what time period is this film set?
It's like fucking Moulin Rouge, man. Any time period.
Like Boss Redbone or...
Boss Redbone. Yeah, exactly. Crawfish Daniels.
But also these FBI agents who are offering unlimited support. There's one... They're both bald. There's the white bald guy and the black bald guy.
And the black bald guy has a little toy Matchbox car, and he has a nervous tic where he's constantly flipping open the hood and then closing it back down again with his thumb. Mm-hmm. And it is possibly the dumbest character moment, or character like little bit of business that I've seen in a movie.
But they make the one bald guy, the black bald guy, into a cranky jerk for no reason.
Does not care about victims, does not care about people. He is dedicated to catching Miles Jansen,
the arms dealer.
Yeah, Mills Jorson. Well, but but he doesn't seem to care how it happens. Doesn't care who dies in the process. He has no. It's and later on in the movie, he says, "I realized this is about the people he hurt, the people he could hurt." And it's like, why were you trying to catch him if you didn't care that he's hurt people?
It's like the screenwriters of this movie. I assume that there are multiple screenwriters of this movie.
To make an opus. Rounds. It's like Shakespeare. You need people rewriting and writing the folios over and over again.
I assume that they had seen a bunch of action movies, so they were familiar with the archetypal characters that you encounter in an action film, but they came in 30 minutes late in every case and didn't see the justification for those characters' personalities. So they had the FBI agent who was just obstructionist and a dick and didn't care about people. But they didn't give any reason for that. And
he just kind of disappears from the movie for a big chunk of it, too. Mm-hmm. During my favorite round, when John Cena is tricked into dialing a phone number, which sets off a bomb destroying the brakes of a cable car.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good round.
And they've got to stop it. Because it's going to run right into a children's carnival, which for some reason is
being
set
held
up
in the middle of the street.
In the middle of the street at the end of the trolley car track. And John Cena's brilliant plan is to race over to the trolley car as fast as he can. The people in the trolley seem to have no idea what's going on, that they're even in danger. And
specifically, the conductor doesn't seem to really do anything. He just kind of... He occasionally fiddles with the brake, and then he like it. Looks around like, should I tell somebody?
No, I mean, like, he gets a little panicked. He's like, oh, wait a minute. This trolley appears to be going much faster than a trolley usually
that's
travels.
That's not an exaggeration of his the amount of his panic. Huh, this is faster than I usually go on this route.
Normally stop at these different trolley
life
stops.
Is a highway. I'll just go with
I'll just ride it all night long. But so their plan is to... stop their car. They back the car up in front of the trolley and they try to use their brakes to stop the trolley. Cena shoots out the windshield.
Do you think they've got four-wheel brakes on that thing? Like,
They have to.
They probably have like 20-wheel brakes. But he shoots out the windshield, climbs onto his car, jumps in through the windshield of the trolley car, and then this is his plan. Pulls the brake on the trolley car, which doesn't work. So he gets on top of the trolley car. Tries to destroy the power line, can't seem to do it. So they drive over to – he gets his car out from in front of the trolley car.
Yeah, he climbs back into his own car.
Climbs back into his own car. Failed. Says to the white bald FBI agent, that didn't work. There's the power transformer over there. Why don't we just ram the car into the big generator unit? So they
I assume that that's you know, powering the specific trolley car.
Yeah, just the one trolley car. So they do, which does nothing. It knocks out power, and then the trolley car still like hits the carnival.
I don't want to pass over this too quickly because
there's no lamb's blood on it.
The most amazing thing in this whole sequence.
Passover, get it? Lamb's blood.
Yeah.
No, it's good.
Read your Torah, people.
The most amazing thing in this whole sequence, and Elliot mentioned it, but I think it bears repeating. John Cena you know, goes to the trouble of climbing from his car into a runaway trolley car just to try and hit the brakes himself. It's like, oh, okay, the conductor is clearly not adequately applying the brakes. I'm going to get into the trolley car, hit the brakes. And then he's like, well, that didn't work. I'm fresh out of ideas,
I'm out of ideas on this one.
When, like, I like to think that a couple of seconds of him being like, hey, FBI guy who I'm riding around in this car with, you know,
which is riding around to the FBI guy. I wish that when they got to the trouble, John Cena leaped out of the FBI guy's mouth at the trolley car.
So he's riding around in this car with this guy. If he had just simply said, okay, I got a plan. We're going to try and slow down the trolley car with the brakes of our car, and I'm going to climb in there and try and pull the brake. And the guy could have been like, no, you're a fucking idiot. Clearly, they would have already used the brakes. Yeah.
Well, you know,
the man's a professional. He's a trolley car driver.
Yeah. The thing it reminded me more of anything was the beginning of was the beginning of Ghostbusters when he's like, "Get her." That was your whole plan, Ray. Get her. Like, it was basically that.
But there it was played for laughs, whereas here it was played for this guy's a fucking badass. Yeah. He's gonna have to try something else.
He's America's greatest hero. What happens when America's greatest hero goes up against Tommy Carcetti?
America's greatest mayor. Explosions. That's what happens. It ends in an explosion. I'm not going to lie.
Okay, so there's a bunch of rounds. There's some shit happens. At the end, there's some really awesome CGI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as we see Tommy Carcetti realize that he's being engulfed in flame at the end.
So his eyes bug out for a second, like a Tex Avery cartoon.
Yeah, the...
I think that's a pretty accurate description.
Well, a little bit of an exaggeration, but
the film is
your
average dumb action film for most of its running time.
But dumber.
And then it has like a totally crazy ending where like John Cena is zapped with
defibrillator paddles
and does the craziest face in the world.
It was one step away from him going I.
And then
his eyes going tilt, and you know.
And then his big plan to escape the helicopter is to jump with his girlfriend into a rooftop pool,
which luckily happens to be there. We'll give them that. But they drop
jump
what?
In the zaniest way possible. It looks like they're like it looks like the beginning of like say a Bond credit sequence where like silhouettes are like dropping from the sky.
Nude women.
No, like, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, possibly nude women, but possibly
if it's
like
a Bond,
James Bond.
If it's a Bond opening title sequence.
There's as many nude women.
It's just nude women dropping out of the sky.
I'm saying the level of special effects is basically the same.
Oh, yeah.
In that, like, something is superimposed over something else.
They jump roughly, what, 300 feet, 200 feet out of a helicopter into a pool?
But it looks like they should be going like, whee! As they fall.
And then at the end, they're walking. There's money falling all around them because somehow he got the money on the helicopter that he stole from the Bureau of Engraving. I missed that part. They are walking by, and they pass by some people who are honeymooning there or whatever. And she says, "We better get you. I better get you home." And he goes, "About the house." And then you hear as we wide shot of the roof. Pull back, rock and roll music, credits, and it's just like, about the house. The plumber was murdered in our house. We should make a donation in his name somewhere.
Yeah.
About the house. We don't have one and a man died. Oh, and we didn't talk about Willie, the overweight hotel security worker who dies in an elevator
crash. You
thought
he was overweight? I thought he looked okay.
He seemed to weigh roughly 350 pounds, if not
more.
But I mean,
for his height.
He was about, what, 5'7"? Come on.
I'm just saying, I think you're being a little rough to the actor. So,
okay, this stout actor.
Okay. What about it? What happened?
They went to a lot of trouble to call him Willie and name him Will. Like, people called his name constantly.
Yeah.
In his very brief moments on camera.
Everyone loves Willie Elliot.
Yeah, that was the guy who was in the elevator car that was going to fall.
Yes.
Who was going to, like, fall in 60 seconds or something.
Were pointing out that the whole, you know, like, good guy team very credulously enters this elevator that they know for a fact the bad guy has had access to.
Well, Willie says, Willie has been seen on camera leading the villain somewhere. And he goes, oh, he told me it was the elevator repairman, that he was just coming by to do the repairs. And then they're like, well, let's get in the elevator and find out where he went to.
He's like, last I saw him, I left him entering this elevator. I'll see you later.
He was carrying his bomb bag to the elevator.
He was asking me something about how much I weighed and whether or not I would die if I fell...
He had two pairs of pliers, and he was like, which one of these pliers do you think would be better for cutting an elevator cord?
I said, definitely that one.
Mm-hmm. I'm a bit of an elevator expert, so I could help him out on that issue.
And a cord-cutting expert.
So, yeah.
Umbilical elevator. I don't care. If it's a cord, I'll cut it.
He's trapped on this elevator that's about to fall. And,
within seconds.
And he, like, is making very little effort to actually get out of this elevator.
Really? Well, this thing is, they get to the top of the elevator. John Cena's hanging from a window frame, and he's saying, Willie, give me your hand. And Willie's literally lying on his side going,
I can't do it.
I can't do it. So lazy. Yeah. Such a lazy man.
Well, yeah, Willie's can't led just, a good life.
Yeah.
Yeah, just getting to the roof is clearly not enough.
Like, and also, John Cena literally pulls this man up completely onto the roof. Willie can't do it. And Willie gets on the roof and collapses and goes, oh, I didn't think I could do it. You didn't do it. Yeah. John Cena did it for you.
And you didn't even do it because you didn't make it all the way. Like, that's... It's like running part of the way and then just standing there while the speeding car runs you over.
And the only reason John Cena could do it is because he has the strength of, you know, holy scrolls being placed inside his clay body.
Yes. Because he's a mud man.
This movie, as we sort of alluded to before...
It makes me want to see a movie where John Cena defends the Jews of Prague. Yeah.
Like in The Marine.
Yeah, is that what he does in The Marine?
Yes.
Okay. In The Marine, they build him to save the Jewish ghetto of Prague.
Against Robert Patrick, who's slowly morphing into Martin Sheen.
Wow. Oh, I was.
What were we going to say about this movie?
I was just going to say that this movie, I think we sort of alluded to it before, but it's kind of like if aliens came and they saw some action movies and they just sort of merged them together. I mean, like, it's got a bit of Die Hard 3. It's got a bit of Speed in the sense that there's like, you know, like the speeding bus and his partner dies very Jeff Daniels style in mm-hmm. Speed. Tracking down another thing. But also it's like the FBI agents, as we stated before, are very indulgent in a way that they would only be if they're like, we've seen action movies before. Clearly this is what's going on.
But there are also things like his partner gets caught in an ambush, and right before he dies, he tells the sidekick or the henchman of the villain who is also about to die, like, he just goes, bitch, and then explodes. And later on, they're getting at Molly and Sana are getting out of the helicopter and leaving Carchetti behind, and Molly goes, land it yourself, bitch. And then he was like, that seems so gratuitous to have two people call a villain bitch.
What? But also, like,
a coincidence? Maybe not. I don't know New Orleans culture.
Maybe that's just a common thing.
Yeah.
But for a movie that's
goodbye.
If you really want to shine somebody on, you're like, bitch, and then kill them.
But for a movie that's so like concerned with action movie like tropes though, like they give John Cena like the most boring end of the movie thing. Like wasn't it just like you lose?
Yeah, he does. He says fuck you at one point, and then later he says you lose. Yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't even like knockout, you know?
TKO. Yeah. You're ready to take on the champ.
Nice. Any more boxing metaphors?
Let's see. Sweet science, sure. Squared circle. That's
hit the
wrestling.
Canvas.
Throw in the towel.
Yeah, yeah,
that's pretty good.
So that, cut my eye, Mickey.
Yeah, because most of after he got
boxing.
Hit.
Boxing.
Crap thunder.
After he got shocked by those, after he got shocked by those paddles, he basically just punched the bad guy a bunch of times. And then the bad guy just sat there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He just laid down.
He was punching him really hard, and this is a tiny guy he's hitting.
this is clearly a professional
wrestler. If
this was not a movie, that man would be dead. Those punches. His neck would snap.
He'd be disfigured at the very least.
It's like he's hitting. It's like the Sandman is hitting him with a giant battering arm hand.
Or a ham.
Or ham. Battering arm ham. That would be the least tasty ham. It tastes like sand.
Yeah, wait, is it like a battering ram, or did he turn his hand into a giant anvil?
Yeah, that could be it, too. Oh, why couldn't he have been Metamorpho? That's what I wonder.
Yeah. So the ending, satisfying, Dan. What do you think? The ending of 12 rounds.
Oh, well, here's something I wanted to mention is that he's a WWE star. The movie's produced by the WWE.
Yep.
Why do they keep using boxing metaphors? Why are they not using wrestling metaphors? 12 rounds could easily be a wrestling match, right?
I guess they don't do it in rounds.
I don't know really the same
story
way.
Yeah. They hit each other with chairs and stuff.
That's how it works. And they staple gun $5 bills to their foreheads.
And sometimes they have heart attacks when they jump off the top turnbuckle. Sometimes.
That's sad.
Marissa Tomei. Marissa Tomei was ready to change his
Marissa
life.
Marissa Tomei.
Yeah.
Tomei.
Have you learned nothing
is that
from
Italian?
George Takei? It's Marissa Tomei. Like George Takei.
I don't know.
Wow. Anyway, you were saying the end of the movie.
Yeah, well, I was mainly just wondering if you guys feel that the end...
you were
like,
saying the end of
the big thing about like a real judge of an action movie, like be it a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, a Steven Seagal movie...
Oh, yeah, the top of the line.
Yeah. The real...
Seagal?
Yeah, Seagal.
The Peter Seagal action movie.
A Steven Seagal movie.
The thing about
movie.
It is that like you really want an awesome ending, like an ending that totally sums up the entire experience. Whether it's the human experience, the movie experience, who knows?
That's I felt. I was just thinking the other day, actually, out of nowhere, of the ending to like Casino Royale, which felt like such a perfect ending to me. Because you see him, the villain drives up to his house, and then he shoots him in the leg, and then he says, you know, Bond, James Bond, and you get the music for the first time, like that kind of ending where like it's real quick and there's a hit, and then the music comes up, and you're like, whoa,
oh, you got me,
you got me,
action movie.
Mm-hmm. Gah! Like or, it should end when you're mid gah! Like that. Anyway, you're saying.
Or like in the end of Universal Soldier where Jean-Claude Van Damme runs Dolph Lundgren through the threshing machine and bloody chunks come shooting out. Like that kind of an ending. And I think it happens in the rain.
So you're saying that like that's the A-plus action movie.
Or
ending.
Like the end of Tango and Cash where they high five and then that's the picture on the newspaper that says they're back.
Wait, who was the photographer there who took that photo?
Somebody took that picture.
And that's very vague. That's just saying they're back. Like,
yeah. Well, Tango and Cash are the most famous cops in America. People recognize their faces. You're forgetting there's a newspaper earlier in the movie that shows Ray Tango and says Tango gets some, and then it shows a picture below the fold of Cash and it says like Cash gets some. Like,
I love that movie so much.
You have to
it's obvious from the contents of your refrigerator you haven't been watching your figure. Probably been keeping your eyes too close on the evidence you used to set us up. Oh, I love that movie.
But you,
Tango!
You think that there's a deleted scene where like Tango and Cash like went and they picked up a newspaper photographer and they're like, we're going to storm Jack Palance's compound tonight. We want you to be there.
Oh, well, this is after the... This isn't the picture isn't taken during the... Oh, maybe it is taken right after they storm.
It's taken right after, yeah.
Oh, that's
like,
right.
The place blows up or whatever.
They don't get into how they clear their names.
Yeah, they blow up all the evidence.
Yeah, it's the Lethal Weapon 2 school of thought there.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, these damn Boers with all their money laundering, these Afrikaners. Yes. Let's just blow the shit up of all the money.
The central problem of the whole movie has been that they have
diplomatic
immunity. And then they're just like...
Let's just shoot him and blow up all the money.
Is that the way he says revoked?
Yeah,
or,
I think so.
I have diplomatic immunity.
The other thing is, diplomatic immunity doesn't extend to major crimes. That's what movies never seem to get. It's like,
I'll have you see Exhibit A, Lethal Weapon 2.
like you can get away with not getting parking tickets, but if you murder people or steal things, then you will be brought up on charges. Like...
But getting back,
if you have guys running around with Uzis through the streets of LA,
there's a in the second Spider-Man Superman team up, Dr. Doom is the villain, and he's at the Latverian embassy in America, and he's been trying to kill Superman for a long time. And Superman shows up, and Dr. Doom goes, don't you follow the rules of this of your adopted country? I have diplomatic immunity, and walks away. And Superman's like, damn, he's got me. Like, there's really no reason that Superman has to follow these rules.
No.
Just like in Lethal Weapon, they get around them.
Mm-hmm. But to get back to the end of 12 rounds.
Sure.
Are we talking about 12 rounds?
I don't even remember what the actual end was because we watched the two alternate endings, which are so tremendously
different. The
alternate
endings literally had one line different in each one.
But wasn't like the original ending just them being like there's this couple, you know, like in a hot tub
on the roof.
On the roof, and they're like, what happened? And he's like, oh, fell out of a helicopter. And they walk out, and he's like,
no, yeah. He goes, jumped out of a helicopter. He goes, helicopter blew up. No big deal.
Yeah, and
although
the way
he says it, it sounds like he says, Moby Dick.
It did sound exactly
did
like
that. Did he say something like hold his girlfriend close and be like, next time, I'm driving you to work.
He does say that, yeah.
Yeah,
I know, maybe I just said that.
No, he does say that.
He does say that because she gets kidnapped when taking the ferry to work.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then there's the line about the house.
Yeah.
About the dead plumber.
But about the house. There's a charred corpse in it.
The two alternate endings. One was
there's a security guard on the roof, and he goes, what happened? There's money fluttering, and he goes, what happened? And the guy says, oh, he jumped out of a helicopter, no big deal. He goes, where'd all this money come from? And he goes, like, congratulations, kid, you just won the lotto.
Yeah, because that money's not going to be
incredibly irresponsible for a civil
but that guy runs the town. He can do what he wants. And the other alternate ending was the same hot tub couple. They go, what happened? And he goes, oh, jumped out of a helicopter, no big deal. And the guy goes, of the hot tubbers goes, we just got engaged. and John Santa goes, word of advice, and turns to Molly, keep her close. Oh, no, or don't let her go, or something like that. Don't let go of her. About the house.
So
ow! Dun, 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 dun,
so this dun, hot tub dun, couple was like, yeah, enough about your boring fell out of a helicopter story. By the way, we just got engaged.
Like, you jumped out of a helicopter. Great. Congratulations is in order. We got engaged. Hello.
John
also, speaking of someone who got engaged about 9 days ago.
Ow!
Thank you. Sorry, ladies. I'm taken for now. And nice. Forever, but that is a pretty not classy way to pop the question in a hot tub. I hate to say,
wait,
on
so
a roof.
you didn't pop the question? In
well,
a hot
look,
tub.
It's really romantic.
Tub, no. Were you wearing
you're
a
on
chicken
a roof?
Suit?
I was not wearing a chicken
no,
suit.
No. Elliot, imagine this: you're on a roof, you're in a hot tub, helicopters are exploding all around you.
That is pretty
romantic. You're wearing some, you know, like some jams.
Where does
some,
he keep
like,
the ring?
Money is floating down from the sky. Maybe that augurs well for your romance, your life together.
Maybe they got, well, the Chinese would say that that's a good luck sign for your future.
Treasure bath?
Treasure, yeah. History of the World Part 1 would say that that's good luck. For. Yeah. But the... maybe they got engaged
or
earlier.
Uncle Scrooge.
Maybe they got engaged earlier in the day. In which case, that's pretty. Come on, you give it a rest for a couple hours. Not everyone needs to know that you got engaged.
Yeah, but I mean, if you get engaged, your first choice is to go to a rooftop hot tub and then just party. Right?
Again, we didn't do that. That's
you
not,
didn't do that. You
not
guys,
really
you guys went to separate bedrooms and watched TV and fell asleep by 10 o'clock.
We bundled. We were each wrapped in blankets so tight we couldn't get out. Uh-huh. Then we shared the bed together to see what that was like, but still remained chaste.
Sure, of course.
It's very common in our religion.
Oh, okay,
that's what happens when you get engaged at Colonial Williamsburg. So,
oh, that would have been such a good idea. I should have done
no.
that. Like, we walk into the blacksmith shop, and he's banging something on the anvil, and it's like, oh, what's that you got there? Ah, something for a lucky bride, Danielle. And then he hands it to her, and she turns, and I'm on my knee. And they go, like, prithee, yon maiden.
And then she marries the blacksmith.
That's the thing.
That's the one flaw in my plan.
Yeah. Sounds like somebody on Brombones did that.
She marries Brombones.
No! Damn
Not
Brombones.
Not you, Ichabod.
Scaring me away in his headless horseman costume.
So, I think we should render our final judgments on this movie, because we've been talking for a little while.
Final judgments?
Yeah, final judgments.
What are the categories, Daniel?
They are.
Not Danielle.
Daniel.
I was talking to you.
Danielson.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not my fiance Danielle. This is Dan McCoy, host of the Flophouse.
Mm-hmm. Famous host of the Flophouse.
Host of the Flophouse.
Famous host of the Flophouse.
Infamous host of the Flophouse. Let's compromise.
Okay. The categories are, is this a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie that you actually sort of liked? So, Stuart, I'm going to go to you.
I'm going to go good, bad movie. It did totally feel like somebody had just watched a bunch of other action movies and they're like, we can do this. This is easy. And then they decided to pick a WWE star to be in the lead. And then they didn't pick Kane. Yeah, it just wrote itself.
The Undertaker couldn't do this part. Like, what's the problem?
Yep. Macho Man Randy Savage is a little long in the tooth.
Hollywood Hulk Hogan was not available.
I guess he's
back to being Hulk Hogan now. He's not Hollywood Hogan anymore.
Oh, yeah. I think he just goes by Terry now. Terry Hogan. So, Terry. I'm gonna say, you know, I think it's a good bad movie. It's not, I didn't actually like it that much, but it was fun to watch.
I'm gonna go, I feel like it's somewhere between a good bad movie and a movie I actually sort of enjoyed, because it's a dumb action movie. It's really dumb.
Really, wait.
It is dumb as a brick.
But
stupid as a bag of hammers.
But it's dumb largely in an entertaining way, and it is bad. I don't want you to misunderstand me. It's a bad movie, but it's not bad in like a way where I'm like, this is hilariously inept. It's just bad in that it is again dumb.
Rock stupid.
So, but I enjoyed it, and I think it has a good intersection of being trashy and not having a brain in its head. So I'm gonna go somewhere in between good, bad, and a movie that I actually enjoyed.
I'm gonna go with you on that day. Like I did enjoy the fact that it never stopped moving, pretty much, mm-hmm. except for a few moments when John Cena would literally stand there and look at things,
and you just and grimace. Like
flashes, right?
There's lots of flashes in slow motion as he just stared at people who couldn't possibly be involved in any.
Yeah, and he would remember flashbacks of his girlfriend, and it would just be shots of his girlfriend holding their dog. It wouldn't be like them doing something together and being like, "Oh, I remember when we did that together. I love her so much." And just like, "Oh, that's my girlfriend."
My favorite thing was when he found pictures of his girlfriend tied up in the hotel room. And then he had flashes of what it probably looked like to have her lying there all tied up.
Yeah, he just imagined it. He couldn't remember.
There's no way he could remember that because
he wasn't there.
Yeah, he's not like a spirit walker or something.
If only.
Yeah.
But yeah, but the movie for the most part never stopped moving, and it was endearingly stupid for the most part. Like, it did not ask you to believe that John Cena was very bright, just that he could think his way through very simple puzzles that didn't really make sense. A lot of the times he was in these cat and mouse games where the rules were stacked and there didn't follow any logic, and they didn't even try to make them into like puzzles really. It was more like, get to this place on time and then fucking do stuff. I don't care, whatever, man, just do shit. And everyone like played their parts to the tilt. They were all yelling at each other all the time.
Yeah.
And you know, it was just stupid fun stuff, but so stupid. Just stupid.
But yeah,
I have to say, rock stupid.
I have a lot of affection for any kind of an action movie where your master criminal, the entire movie, the hero like is repeatedly put in situations where you're like, oh no, if he fucks this up just a little bit, he's gonna get exploded. And then at the end you find out that like every little nuance of this entire story, the master criminal has planned out. Yeah. And then at the very end he's like, you know what? I'm going to stake my entire getaway plan on this hostage to fly me away. Like, at this point, she has nothing to lose. We're in a helicopter. I can't threaten her with a fucking gun, because she can just say, oh, you shoot me now, we'll fucking crash and you're dead, dumbass.
Yeah, I can't believe actually we didn't even address this, is that, yes, the whole thing turned out to be Miles Johnson or whatever, like, trying...
Miles Jackson.
Jack Travis.
Mark Trail.
Jack Markson.
Jack Johnson.
His scheme, like Joe as Johnson. We said, was like really just a distraction for his like money making scheme. And so John
thousands of tiny ads in newspapers all across the country.
John Cena was leaflets. A pawn this whole time. So all the times where like he put John Cena in physical danger early in the film don't make any sense, because like if John Cena didn't turn out to be this super cop, he would have died. And also,
and the plan would have been foiled by his death.
And also, this master criminal apparently, like, even though he just escaped from prison, had time to run around town and set up all these elaborate
snipers. Yeah.
Oh God.
And what's great about, well, and what I would have liked to have seen is this moment of realization in our hero's face. Like, you know what?
You were not going to see any emotions in the hero's face. You were going to see gritted teeth or dumbstruck idiot.
I would have liked to see this moment of realization where he's like, you know what? This guy, he's a criminal, but he had this all planned out. Like, at no point was I genuinely in any real danger or my girlfriend. And then he, you know, instead of beating the guy to death or whatever.
Well, he took him to dinner?
He put him in cuffs or something and then took him to jail.
Yeah, he had a little respect.
Yeah, instead of, you know, just killing the criminal and scattering all the evidence of his wrongdoings.
Again, like, he's killed him, and all this money was being taken out of circulation anyway, so it's not like it was going anywhere it needed to go, but, like, this, yeah, all the money he stole was just fluttering down to the streets of New Orleans. The helicopter has exploded, and it's not like it was vaporized. There's big fucking chunks of helicopter falling on the streets of New Orleans, mm-hmm. and he's like, ugh. It's all over, baby. Like,
yeah.
I hope he at least his partner is dead. I hope he at least has to fill out some paperwork.
There was
this.
A shot of like a gurney falling out of the helicopter, and I wanted an insert right, of like that gurney hitting someone on the street below. Like, oh my god, the horror, the destruction caused by John Sanders.
He's wrecked no less than 40 cars in the course of the film, and motorcycles.
That once you hit that point, you don't have to do paperwork anymore.
Yeah, they fire you.
Yeah,
it's police procedure. Anytime it's police procedure, if you're a detective and a master criminal has captured your girlfriend, you do not have to contact anybody.
Well, that's the other thing. This whole thing is caused because a year ago, when he first stopped and caught Mick Jargson, he, like, instead of calling for backup...
The famous Swedish master criminal.
Marg Jolglin. Instead of calling for backup and telling them, I think I found this guy, he just starts shooting at the car and then running after it on foot. Like, and he says at one point, like, to his partner, he's like, if I'd called for backup, maybe none of this would have happened.
Maybe this girl wouldn't have died.
Maybe that girl wouldn't have died. I was like, yeah, you're exactly right. Most likely she wouldn't have died.
John Sand is now 2 for 2 for dumb action movies. This is the Marine.
Yeah, that's pretty good, though. Like, that's a pretty good record.
Yeah.
That Steven Seagal. I don't know if he could say the same thing.
Steven or Steven Squagel.
Mm-hmm.
It's a square bagel.
So... So, we don't have any mail this week.
Boo! Whose fault is that, Dan?
Yeah.
The listeners.
Better check okay. your email.
I'll accept that answer. It sounded like you were going to accuse me for a second there.
Well, you could have written letters.
It's my mom's fault for not sending us any emails.
Wait
this
a minute.
So
it's all those letters about what a sexy voice you have.
I know.
I'm going to take this time to, you know, do a little house cleaning, a little business. If you want to write us... You can do that at theflophousepodcast@gmail.com.
You do want to write us. What's that email address again?
Theflophousepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com.
Theflophousepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com.
No, don't spell out all one word, because that's not part of
it. Do you spell it differently in the email address?
Ah, Jesus Christ. And also, you can go to us on the web at theflophousepodcast.blogspot.com. And, you know, there's other stuff on the website.
We want a wieldy, right?
What?
We want a wieldy for most unwieldy URL and email address. Coveted wieldy.
So, yeah, and we want what? Emails. We want email pictures.
Pictures. Videos.
Cakes with files baked in them.
Yeah, so in case we want to escape from Dan's apartment.
Yep.
We should start a contest at some point, I think.
Oh, yes. Ellie, you wanted to restart the Flop with the Floppers.
Yeah, because contest. The winner of the Flop with the Floppers contest moved out of town and didn't get to collect her prize, A Night with Stuart Wellington, and the rest of us watching a movie. But okay. So if, you know, we should restart that contest.
Well, the contest was always sort of vague, so maybe we should...
It was pretty much just do something that was Flophouse-related.
Do something that we think is cool that's Flophouse-related.
We'll try to help get our listenership.
Yeah, impress
us. Get out the word.
Impress
get out the word.
Get out the word. Send us evidence of you doing this.
Yeah.
And maybe you can win a you-expenses-paid trip to watch a movie with us.
We'll provide some of the expenses. I will provide the Popeyes brand fried chicken.
Mm-hmm. I'll buy some beer.
I'll probably be wearing a small swimsuit the whole
as
time.
As he is right
as
now.
As he is now.
He's
yep.
wearing a tiny swimsuit. Yet again, this is the second podcast we have recorded where Stuart has taken his pants off to reveal a alarmingly small
not
swimsuit.
Not just to reveal, to remain in.
And watch the entire movie in and then do the entire podcast recording in.
But, I mean, don't get me wrong, guys. I am wearing socks and shoes at the same time.
All right, so there's that. Elliot.
There's something very Tom of Finland about it, yeah.
Yep.
By the time that this podcast goes out, they will not be able to see The Devil and Daniel Webster.
No, that will have passed. Because that's on this Wednesday, the 15th.
But you will be doing more 92Y screenings starting in September.
September. In September, we'll be showing Love Me Tonight, which is a great movie. It's one of the silliest movies in the world. 30s musical that's really silly, but a lot of fun. And in October, we're supposed to be showing The Old Dark House. I think we have the print ordered for that, which is a very crazy old movie. It's the movie James Whale made between Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein, and it is about a bunch of nuts living in an old dark house, and they are spooky.
Well, that sounds good. And there will be one more Mr. White Pants sketch show after this podcast goes out on July 24th, I believe. That's a Friday the 24th at the Magnet Theater. And I'll put a link up on the site. A Flophouse fan came out to the last show and said hi. So
Flophouse fans are very friendly. I was a guest on Comic Book Club at the Pit, and there was a Flophouse fan.
I believe this is the same gentleman.
It might be. He's a very nice guy.
That's awesome.
So
I want to plug something.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not plugging like a weird question this time.
or the fact that you bought blue jeans.
or my new blue jeans. What I want to plug is one of a longtime Flophouse fan, a movie aficionado,
okay,
and a rock and roller, a friend of mine, Alexander mm-hmm. Delicious Smith. He's been working on a record.
Yeah.
And you should go check it out on MySpace. If you like music,
mm-hmm.
check it out. His little band's called Lydia Burrell, L-Y-D-I-A. Burrell is B-U-R-R-E-L-L. Check it out. Awesome stuff.
He's a very funny gentleman as well.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote, if you look up, I believe his website is Sounds Delicious. Mm-hmm. He wrote a very funny review of the movie Wanted, which I enjoyed a lot.
Yeah.
The review.
At least something good came out of the movie Wanted.
All right. So now that we've done our round of plugs, I think we're going to move on to less boring things. Which should be, I think, recommending some movies.
Quick
proving that we're not miserable bastards.
We gotta get out of here.
Sure, okay. I'll go first. I'm going to recommend a movie directed by Rennie Harland called...
Harland. Like Harland Wilson?
Yeah.
popular comedian.
Or Harland Ellison.
Yeah. Harland Ellison, yeah, it's not even his name.
It's a little movie directed by Rennie Harland.
Again.
it's called Mindhunters. Okay. I've probably recommended this before.
You mentioned it earlier in the podcast.
The thing that's great about this is a movie that was, it was advertised and then it was pushed back and it was advertised and pushed back and eventually it had a direct-to-video release. It's about a group of FBI like trainees mm-hmm. who are being trained to hunt down serial killers. So they have to get into the mind of a killer. And they get put on this weird island, and it, surprise, surprise, one of their number turns out to be a serial killer.
Now this has Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer is great in it. Christian Slater.
Is Lowell Cooch in it?
Isn't the aforementioned Ladies Love Cool James is in Lowell it?
Coulch. Absolutely. Johnny Lee Miller.
Wow. Yep. Is he Plunkett or McClane?
I think he's both of them in this movie.
Since that's what he plays in every movie, apparently.
So yeah, it's,
back when you could make a movie about punk highwaymen.
If you want to see a bad movie that is totally fun, and it's about serial killer hunting students, it's awesome. Good movie.
Okay.
And at one point, Christian Slater gets his body frozen and dies. And then he gets shattered.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, it's okay.
I'm going to recommend the movie. I actually picked this up on DVD cheap recently. The movie Something Wild. It's a Jonathan Demme movie. Along with Stop Making Sense, probably my favorite Jonathan Demme two movies. Before he made Silence of the Lambs, he made these like great oddball comedies, mm-hmm. and that movie, it's one of the like really good, shift in tone movies. Like it starts out as sort
like
of
Audition.
It starts out as sort of like a screwball comedy, and then it gets really sort of like tense. It's like a tense thriller as soon as Ray Liotta shows up, and.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, it's a it's a beautifully shot movie. It's got a lot of great music in it. And at one point, they go to like this reunion, and the Feelies are the band that's playing the reunion live. And it's just really fun. That's what I recommend.
I'm going to recommend not a movie, but a book about a movie.
Oh,
hello,
man.
Outside of the box, like Sarah Palin. You may, it sounds crazy, but it's just because I'm...
Is that a euphemism?
No, it's not a euphemism. Okay. I recently read the book The Devil's Candy by Julie Salomon, I believe her name is, and it's a book
like,
about...
Is it about, is it about like saltwater taffy? Is that the
it
Devil's
is not,
Candy?
That is the Devil's Candy. It tastes terrible. Candy Corn would be the Devil's Candy then. Devil's Candy is a book about the making of the film version of Bonfire of the Vanities. Famously, not a very good movie. Mm-hmm. Huge flop when it came out. And it is a really good, very thorough look at the making of this film in which a ton of very talented people working as hard as they can.
You're talking about Melanie Griffith.
Just Melanie Griffith. But like... But a lot of it's a ton of very talented people working as hard as they can made a really shitty film that it's not the worst movie in the world, but it's pretty bad. And she talks about so many things on a movie set that you don't usually read about. She talks about the experience that Bruce Willis's body double, who stands in for him during lighting tests, what he goes through, things like that, what all the location guys were going through, literally every facet of making a movie that big. At the time, it cost, about 40-some-odd million dollars, which was huge. This was like 1990. And it's just really good. And you know in the back of your mind that this movie is going to be shit. So every time they're like, it's a lot of work, but it's all going to be up on film. This is going to be a great movie. And you're like, oh, you poor deluded people. This is terrible. And you see them every step of the way working as hard as they can and making the kind of compromises that will not help the film at all, but will hurt it. And it's a really good book.
By the way, I don't know why I singled out and made fun of Melanie Griffith, seeing as I just recommended Something Wild.
Well, one of the movies that made her. Yeah.
Co-stars Melanie Griffith. I'm sorry, Melanie Griffith. You've done good work.
Yeah, Flophouse, diehard Flophouse listener Melanie Griffith is not going to be happy. You're going to get an angry letter from Antonio Manderas, yeah. Sir. As well as
Manderas? Well,
Antonio Manderas, yeah.
He's got so much testosterone, that's what we call him.
As well
right
as a signed copy of his directorial debut, Crazy in Alabama, starring his wife, Melanie Griffith.
He's going to come by, he's going to beat me up, and yet I'm going to feel strangely grateful to him.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because he's such a man.
A man whose greatest success lately has been voicing a cartoon cat.
All right. So, guys, Flophouse, eh? It's a podcast that we do.
I love it. You've done how many of these? 40 now?
I can't find any way to gracefully end them.
Nope, impossible.
So we're done, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Say your name.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm Dan McCoy.
I will always be Elliot Kalin.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Take your... Put your pants back on.
Oh, fuck that.
'Cause that's where I said
Emmanuel in space.
Because you're actually talking.
Emmanuel versus the vampires.
Emmanuel in Rio. That's a terrible movie, Emmanuel versus the vampires. Not sexy even at all.
I have never even seen it.
Oh, well. Or do you think it's Emmanuel versus Dracula is what it's called, I think.
I kind of want to see Vampire Girl versus Frankenstein Girl, but
I don't know that one.
It's a Japanese movie.
Ah, I should have known.
It's by the guy who made Robo Geisha.